I'm shouting into a bin on the deck of a pool. I could be in the pool drinking beer, but no, I'm shouting into a bin, which contained the microphone.
Now, if you'd been doing the pod in the pool, then that would have been truly impressive.
I would have got electrocuted. Given our electronic skill base, I think we probably would have ended up with a fatality on the podcast. Hey, look, well, this is a dynamic duo. We'll be back again. Another back with DJ, you better pack it in. You're lacking sense. Trying to tangle with us, go with a big black boobies in the back of the bus to smack you up. And stealing your lunch, money to search. Money to feel just a touch. Hungry by the end of the day, that's understandable. What can I say? You got a strong man to be.
Gary has absolutely no idea what has happened to it. Still doesn't know.
Oh, bullshit.
Basketball. Shall we talk about it?
Welcome to our NBA podcast, folks. I'm Doc. It's Bezo. We do this. Normally, about a week into the new NBA season, we have our small sample size theater, massive overreactions to like a handful of games. We're actually doing it a bit more late in the season, a bit more maturely this year.
Well, normally it's in October.
Oh, yes. September. Normally we have a season that makes fucking sense, don't we?
Yeah, it's just everything's just out of whack.
Everything is and when I say we do it responsibly, I am currently sitting on a pool deck with a beer. So some of it is responsible, as I take four attempts to open a bottle of local craft beer from Liberty over on the west coast of Auckland.
I don't really think that it matters that we're this far into the season, though, because you could overreact wildly in whichever way you liked.
Shit's weird, eh? Shit's fucking
and
weird.
You could be completely wrong and still probably be able to defend it in 6 weeks or 8 weeks' time.
Or just say, look at, just wave your hands and say, shit is weird. I mean, congratulations to your Phoenix Suns, though, on winning the Western Conference. That's rather wonderful.
Let me read you the Philadelphia starting lineup today. Dakota Matias, Isaiah Joe, Tyrese Maxey. Like, that sounds like someone that should be playing for the Melbourne Stars.
He's their good young draft pick.
Yeah. And then Danny Green and Dwight Howard, two guys which were fairly seen as washed, I guess.
Yeah, point center Dwight Howard, because they literally had nobody else. This is because they're, you know, most of their team got taken out by being hanging around too close to Seth Curry, who's tested positive for COVID. But as a result, they were down to seven players in this morning's game against the Nuggets. And yet the Nuggets still almost didn't win that game, which probably says more about how the Nuggets are traveling this year than anybody else.
Yeah, the Nuggets are sort of one of those teams that just, I think the Clippers are the much more concerning version of this, where they just don't really look like they care about the regular season. They're more,
but nobody does. That's kind of the way it is. There's a handful of teams that actually do look like they're switched on and ready to go, and everyone else is just kind of feeling their shit out. I'm not saying that they're phoning it in. I mean, the Lakers are a really good example of this. It's not that they're phoning it in, but they are in a league where pretty much everybody is 4-4. Suddenly, if you're 6-3, you look like a fucking genius. But we should probably talk about just how mixed up the conferences actually are.
The Western Conference, except for the order, doesn't look that unusual. The order's a bit
except
weird.
Except the order, which is the entire thing. Well, actually, the West is the most normal. Is the most normal of all the conferences, because congratulations to your Phoenix Suns on winning the Western Conference. They're currently at 7-3, along with the Lakers at 7-3. And the Clippers at 6-4. Now, I was lucky enough to pick the Lakers and the Clippers the way the cards fell. So that's kind of where you thought they were. You picked up the Suns ninth in our draft. And, of course, they're currently, as you said, the prospective Western Conference champions. Utah started terribly and were playing busted arsey. But they're about 500, as are Dallas and the
Spurs.
The Dubs and the Spurs. The Spurs got a win today to get above 500. Dubs are interesting because they sucked until Draymond came back. And they even took one or two games once Draymond came back to actually get back up to speed. In fact, I think it was either side of a back-to-back with Portland. They got absolutely toweled by Portland, and then the game later was Steph's 62-point game.
It seems like Draymond's main role is in the games explaining to all the other players how to play with Steph Curry and be successful. Like, they've just lost...
Or even how to do basic defense.
Yeah, they seem to have lost so much of that knowledge around their core.
Institutional wisdom has all walked out the door.
Yeah, like, they don't even have the Sean Livingstons and the Barboses and those sort of guys hanging around anymore. You know, the stat that just blew my mind is they're like 23rd in 3-point percentage, right? In the league. If you took Oubre's shot attempts out, just his shot attempts, they'd be second in the league in 3-point percentage.
He was shooting 4%. Not 14, 4. Like fingers of one hand, not including the thumb. He was not having a good time.
So the fact that they're sixth and they're not going to get worse, like, I just don't think they're going to get worse as a team. I think I don't think they're going to be like, you know, or Western Conference finalists, but I think they're going to get better because people will...
I don't know if they're going to get a lot better. I think the problem is they're always going to need Steph to get... Because Wiggins is never going to get better than he is. He's always going to be a real hot and cold proposition. Oubre's a streaky shooter, so it'll come back for him at some stage. I mean, it fucking has to mathematically. You've got to come back from 4%. Something's going to go in eventually. Wiseman seems to be handy for them, but... It really just depends on whether Steph has it every night. And at some stage, Steph's not going to have it. They're going to be nights. And they're going to bash up on sub-500 teams. And they played a really entertaining two-game series against the Clippers where they took one and they lost one. I'd love to see that as a
matchup in the finals. Yeah, but the first round series.
Yeah, and it require them to be the seven, I suspect, because I could see it going Lakers Clippers eventually, just because I think that eventually the institutional power of those two organizations will win out and they'll end up as the top two seeds, because even if they're not trying particularly hard, they'll eventually just sort of win enough games through attrition, effectively, that they'll just be there.
You know what the Suns are doing really well this year, and I think it's partially because they've gotten a lot deeper and partially because Chris Paul's there.
It's a lot because of Chris Paul there.
They're doing the old Spurs things of, if there is a side that's not that good in front of you, you just need to beat it.
Yeah.
And then if you split the rest of your other games with good teams, then that's a 50-win season, and they could never do that. You know, they would beat a good side and then they'd go and lose to fucking the Hornets and Chicago in two games in a row. And Paul just seems to have straightened that bit out.
Yeah, and Jay Crowder. Let's give credit to him as well, because he's come across from the Heat and been, you know, exactly the kind of veteran presence that you need. And there's suddenly enough grown-ups in the room that DeAndre Ayton and Devin Booker have somebody to learn from who wasn't just the coaching staff.
Well, and Ayton turning into Draymond Green in attitude of, I'm just going to be the best defender on the court, and if I get some shots up, that's great, instead of being this guy that's demanding 15 shot attempts a quarter, I did not see that coming at all. Just what? Where did that come from? But that's huge for them, because if he can be the third or fourth best defensive player and just absolutely smash it on defense, then that makes them a completely different proposition. They just seem so much more competent than they did, you know, ever since Nash left, I think. Yeah. The Clippers worry me. I do not think any team would enter a final series with the Clippers scared little bit.
Not
like,
at this stage.
That they lost that game to the Warriors. They almost lost a game where they were up by 35 or something against the Suns the other week.
Yeah, well, they let the Suns get to within a point, or might have even equaled them when they were up by 35. Yeah. They were up 20 on the Dubs, and shipped that game. Now that's the trend of this season, is that you have a lot of blowouts and you have a lot of teams sort of two-sided blowouts where a team gets blowout score in front, and then the other team blows them out in the second half of the game and comes back and matches them. So
but a lot of this stuff, though, especially in a seven game series, having that institutional knowledge of, oh well, like, you can go in at half time and the coach can say, I'm down 30, and the coach can say, hey, it's the Clippers, we're totally in this, and everyone on your side is going to believe that what the coach is saying. They
hold up a picture of Paul George and say,
off we go.
This guy is their second best player. Good luck.
Just, Yeah, I did not envy Ty Lue's job.
Well, that's the other thing about the Clippers, though, is that it's a bit hard to judge them because they are, you know, every team is going through something new, and the Clippers are going through integrating new players. And I have to say that I have to take back all that slander about Ibaka being washed. And also across the hall, Gasol being washed. We might get to that when we talk about the Raptors on the other side.
Is the Steph argument over? Like,
fuck, there was no Steph argument.
I know, but
people who were ever questioning Steph were bad faith actors who hate the way he plays basketball because he's comparatively little and skinny and looks like a 12-year-old boy compared to Shaq. But the entire idea that you know, because he was playing, and to be fair, he was playing poorly. He was not playing well without, and he clearly needs somebody around him. He needs, but all he needed was a bit of Dre. And all of a sudden, he's back scoring 62 points against the literal worst defense in the league, we have to add. I mean, I saw one of those Kirk Goldsberry efficiency landscape things that graph offensive and defensive efficiency. And a week ago, the Blazers were literal fucking last in the league on defense. This is what happens when you hire Jim Boylan as an assistant coach.
But the flip side, like I had quite a few sort of discussions about the Steph thing and saying, you know, Harden's an instant NBA final spot, you know, like he carries his team. Like,
hang on,
he's never not had a very good second player from Dwight Howard to Chris Paul to Russell Westbrook. He's never not had somebody there.
He's also never not failed in the playoffs.
Yeah.
I mean, it's always too much for him in the playoffs because his shit doesn't work in the playoffs, to paraphrase Billy Beane of the Oakland A's. It was such a bad faith argument in the first place, and it's just stupid internet conversations. Sort of barbershop bullshit. If you ever genuinely thought Steph's legacy was in question because he wasn't, you know, leading the Dubs to 73 wins in a 72 game season with literal nobody around him, he needs other guys around him. So do literally every other basketball player on the earth, apart from maybe LeBron James. And even then, he could do his best years were when he had Wade and Bosch with him.
Yeah, and even in his even the Cleveland years, I guess probably the biggest argument for him is the finals against the Dub the first time when Dele was his offsider.
Yeah.
But then you look at the
games. That wasn't a fully optimized Dubs team yet. That was that was before they'd learned how to win yet. That was very early.
And look at Steph's performance against the Raptors last year when he didn't have Clay and he didn't have KD. Now they lost, but so did LeBron. But he still played fucking awesome and was still, you know, basically causing huge problems for the Raptors. It was the three other non-Draymond players, again, the same as it is this year, that were pulling him down.
Yeah, so. And it's purely a stylistic issue. The people who are constantly dragging Steph for his legacy are doing it. It's because the way LeBron wins looks different to the way Steph wins.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, obviously that's bullshit. I mean, I feel like the Dubs are going to, as I say, beat up a lot of sub-500 teams, split the difference against good teams, and probably end up being about where they are, which is about sixth.
It looks like they've done well with Wiseman. It looks like Wiseman's going to be a genuine piece in a couple of years, which is takes the pressure off him. Like if next year, if he can carry a couple of games by himself, and Steph and Clay and Draymond can just kick back, then it was probably worth having that year from hell last year.
Yeah.
So
I mean, there aren't too many teams in terms of the top of the West. There aren't that many surprises apart from the Suns. But then again, they were. You know, that proves that the bubble stuff wasn't bullshit. Your Spurs being 5-4, and we are overreacting to small sample sizes, obviously, but the Spurs just go out there and keep Spursing. The Thunder are just outside the 8 at 4-4, and as we've said many a time, and this just reminds us that we are right more often than we're wrong, the Thunder don't know how to lose even when they're supposed to be tanking. There's something wrong with that organization. They don't know what they're doing.
Presti's opening spreadsheets going, oh, I literally can't. I've got first round draft picks and a couple of guys and one good player, and I can't get rid of anyone else. Yeah. I can't get any more draft picks.
Can I just trade the fucking? They've run out of things to trade. They've got a new coach. You know, everything. They've done everything they can do to make it work less well. But the thing is, you have to ask me who their coach is, and I can't remember.
Well, I just read the like I wish I'd read this before our wins pool actually, but I just read Nick Nurse's book, and there was a whole heap in there about the guy that's now coaching the Indiana Pacers, and
Nate Bjerken.
Yeah.
Well, we'll come to that, but you know, all that stuff that we were allowed wrong at various points in our preview, and one of the things we were allowed wrong about was the idea that Indiana wouldn't be as good because they preferred the previous coach. That's clearly not the fucking case at all. The only team that I'd be properly worried about, and this is also me concern trolling because I pointed this out and you very loudly yelled at me, the Nuggets look like shit.
Yeah, I'm not that phased by it.
Well, the thing is, they and the Raptors shouldn't be shit. Because they haven't changed. The parts that have changed shouldn't have been important. But it seems like both of those teams, in a weird kind of way, you take some what you would appear to be non-key parts, like Jeremy Grant and Torrey Craig, take them out, and all of a sudden none of it works as well as it did. And Jeremy Grant's off scoring lots of points and you know, not impacting on winning at all at the Pistons, because that's what he wanted to do. And the Raptors, I'm sure we'll get to as well, have the same problem, that taking out the smartness of Gasol and Ibaka has had a much bigger basketball IQ impact on winning than you would have expected just from their box score outputs. It seems to me this is the season of the box score is no way to judge whether a basketball player is impactful or not, because there's so many, like Draymond's box scores have been fucking terrible, you know, if you were just judging by the output there. But clearly that's not what's dictating who wins those games that the Dubs are in.
And I think the Raps and the Nuggets are both similar sides in that they get to a point where they can't overpay someone. Yeah. Like, that they've got to be sustainably successful. So,
and they're always at have the dips upper edge. Where they're very well coached. They're always performing at the absolute upper edge of what that squad is capable of. And you don't need very much. You know, you only need like little 1% knocked off each player for it all to be multiplicative in terms of the effect on winning that we're seeing on the negative side of things.
You know, so for the Raptors, it might be they've got to develop Boucher.
He had a good game yesterday. I mean, the Raptors won. They put 144 points on the Kings yesterday. So, The Kings are 10th. The Kings are 4-5. The Kings are good. If you know, the players' dads would stop fighting on Twitter, it'd actually be working out quite well.
I just want to point out that the Thunder have a 7-foot point guard that sounds like he should be opening the batting for Australia, playing 19 minutes a game in his first year. So
that's good, because Australia's openers have been a bit of an issue recently.
Yeah, maybe he can do both. But and same with the Nuggets. Like, the Nuggets feel like they're, you know, they offered Grant the same amount of money. Yeah. They couldn't offer him
bigger role,
what he wanted, because they've got Murray. And so now they're going to have to find.
I mean, Murray and Michael Porter Jr. have not been performing to the same level as they did in the bubble. Now, fine, that's understandable. But they're going to need them too, because currently they're, 11th. At 4-5, small sample size, masterpiece theatre, overreaction time. They're on the same win loss as Sacramento and New Orleans. I'm not worried about the Pelicans because they asked a development team. Houston sucked, but we knew they were going to suck because they've trading away all their players, and their main player has not even been phoning it in. He's been texting it in from the car park of the fucking strip club. Memphis, I'm surprised a little bit by how much they suck. I mean, they're 3-6. They're really
But what's the name's out? That's why.
Yeah, what's the name? I don't know who you're talking about. And you don't know you.
Ja Morant injured himself in the first game. Yeah. So, you know, he's their engine. Yeah. That's.
And their engine is fucked, a bit like my laptop. And Minneapolis are fucking terrible. And we knew they would be because that's why we picked them. Well, Adam picked them.
Yeah. See, this is a story we're really going to have to watch, because that's only a top one protected pick, isn't it? If it falls 2, 3, or 4, Golden State get that pick.
I thought it was top three this year and unprotected next year, but I might be conflating that with somebody else's, with one of the other similar kinds of trade arrangements. But that was my impression.
Because
the idea is they're bad this year and they're going to be bad next year as well.
That's really going to hurt in a good draft if you get the number 4 pick or 5 pick, and then you've got to hand it over to the Warriors. And you're going to suck again the next year, so
we'll just trade for James Harden now and get it over with. Wow. But the other thing is, that's also a team that the owner wants to sell, and he almost sold to the guy who bought the Utah team, but the guy who bought the Utah team kind of had an epiphany where he realized, actually, no, I'm a lifelong Utah fan. What am I doing buying a team 2 hours down the road?
And there's a massive difference. Just institutionally, there's just a massive difference between it. Like the Buck, the Minnesota feel like a little bit like the Clippers, where it's just you're just swimming against an institutional tide that you're not gonna be able to beat very quickly.
It doesn't matter if they change literally everybody in the organization. There's just an organizational stench, like they built the organization over the an old graveyard or something. It's just, and the thing is though, I mean, the Clippers have changed owner, massive, you know, huge amounts of money. Everyone is, you know, the flying roster. There's nothing the same about the Clippers apart from the fact that they still play in Staples, and yet we still expect them to fail because they're the fucking Clippers.
Yep. Move them to Seattle and call them the Sonics, and that's about the only way.
Well, expansion seems to be a thing, isn't it? But I think they want to get new teams because they want to get new money, because they kind of need new money. So they want to get probably Seattle, and there's plenty of other places have been talked about, like Vegas or Louisville, because Kentucky college basketball is very big and they feel like they can do something there. But we'll see how that turns out. Should we go east, where Indiana were number one until they lost the top of the table clash with your Suns today? So we've got Philly and Boston at 7-3. I'll take my apology for talking down the Celtics anytime now, if you like.
I was going to say they're two teams that could quite easily go on a 5-game losing streak over the next 2 weeks simply because they don't have any players.
Yes, simply because they all have them COVIDs. Indiana, actually, I watched a bit of the Phoenix Indiana game, and I'll be honest, it's the first time I've seen either team play this year, because I've been watching mostly the nationally televised games. Sabonis was really, really good. I mean, he had 30 and 22 in terms of boards. So they're real.
But the other thing with them is Turner has not chucked a sulk that he's not now the focal point of the offense. He's just gone, right, I'm just going to be this absolute dominant shot blocking beast of a defender. So they're sort of getting the best of both worlds on, you know, one guy that can focus on offense and really get things going, and the other guy can just be this absolute lockdown defender and sort of, you know, be the go-bearer of the team. It's, I don't think that they're going to be super keen to trade Turner anytime soon.
I think they're going to do what they often do, which is to pull out, you know, they're going to overperform. And what's interesting is that we alluded to it earlier, but so much of the commentary from the players themselves has been about how much they want to play for this new coach. Now, I feel like that tends to be a bit of a oblique shot at the previous coach, but he's clearly got them performing at a level that you know, they weren't a 6-3 multiplied out across the course of a season level team.
Mm. See, I think their last coach was a competent coach and very, everything was well drilled. Yeah. It was more that he wasn't a very modern coach and they felt like they were leaving some stuff on the floor. So it's probably not so much that they didn't like the coach. It's more that they wanted to play in a more modern system.
Yeah. And what's interesting was that when he came in, they thought, oh, this guy really is a Neanderthal, because he'd been the coach of Portland and Seattle and played glacially slowly. And when he was coaching Indiana, they were actually playing quite quickly. They were, in fact, at some stages of the season, they were racking up, you know, the fastest possessions in the league. But just playing fast basketball doesn't mean you're playing modern basketball.
Yeah.
So Indiana are going to be good, and they're going to be, I reckon they're probably, even though we did talk a lot of smack about their prospects in the preview, I reckon Adam picking them up at basically in the eighth pick, I think they're going to finish higher than that.
Shall we talk about the back end of the Eastern Conference? Before
we get to that, are there a few teams there in the kind of the mid range that I think we need to talk about? Orlando had a fantastic early start, and it's really sad to see that Markelle Fultz has been crocked again. He's kind of the Dante Exum of the Eastern Conference, isn't he? And of course, Dante's managed to get away with a calf injury that'll only put him out for 2 months this time, rather than fucking another ACL or an Achilles or something. So they're 6-4. So are Milwaukee. Again, are you worried about Milwaukee?
No.
I feel like they're
them and Denver feel exactly the same to me, whereas it just feels like...
I've got more faith in Milwaukee. I have to say I have more faith in Milwaukee to come back.
Sure, because I've...
Drew Holiday. I mean, they added quality pieces, whereas Denver only had quality pieces leave. I mean, it's not the same quality, but it was all the net flow. I mean, actually, that's not quite true because Milwaukee did trade away Eric Bledsoe and I think one other.
Yeah, but who's Milwaukee's third best player? It's either, you know, it's a tip of a coin between Holiday and
Middleton.
Who's Denver's third best player? Like, it's Michael Porter Jr. and he's a second year player essentially. Yeah. That's the big difference is until Denver get that real like top notch.
They've got a whole lot of equal third best players.
Yeah. Yep. That's what they're missing.
The New York Knicks at 5-4. I think we should, after having slandered the Knicks for the entire 6-year run of this podcast, I think we should.
Well,
this will be the only moment at which we will ever mention the fact that the Knicks are in the top 8 and have been successful, because this won't last under any circumstances. But shouts to the fucking Knicks. You don't suck yet.
I gave them a compliment last night to Steve Smith, and he said, I'm not about to give the Knicks any credit for a week of not abysmal play. And then who did they play last night? They played someone terrible and went out and lost. The Hornets maybe or the Pistons, or I don't know. It was very Knicks-y. Like, the thing is, Tibbs will get them enough games to run
Thunder
into the finals.
It was the fucking Thunder.
It was the Thunder. Yeah.
The literal reverse in organization to the Knicks, because the Knicks cannot win even when they're trying, and the Thunder cannot lose even when they're trying. And they're both playing the same colours too, which there might be something into that.
The Cavs have the best defense in the league, I think, by that thing you sent me today, which is what? What is going on there? Like, by a huge amount. Like, you look at that graph of Goldsberry, and it's like the Cavs are way out.
Yeah.
You know,
So what we're talking about is the efficiency landscape is something that ESPN's Kirk Goldsberry maps out. He was a Grantland guy who then got headhunted by the Spurs to run some of their analytics stuff, and then he's come back to ESPN. But, the Cavs, who are seventh and are a 500 team, first in defense and 29th in offense, which is bad. The only team worse than them in offense is the Oklahoma City Thunder, who just beat the Knicks, as we just spoke about previously.
Funny shit. Dear.
Charlotte, 5-5, and they're being held up by good and Hayward performances, which you kind of expect. Brooklyn and Miami are both just outside the 8 at the moment. They'd be in the play-in spots at the moment. Are you worried about either of those two teams? Brooklyn had a shocking run with big outs, with Durant having to take some games off for COVID.
They've had one real bad one, which was Dinwiddie's out for the season.
Yeah, Dinwiddie's done. Durant is out for about another week or so, I think, with COVID stuff. And it looks like Kyrie's having some personal struggles. People are assuming it's because of, he might be struggling with his mental health around the Jacob Blake cops not getting prosecuted in the shit fight with the insurrection at the Washington Capitol and that sort of stuff. But it's really hard to tell with Kyrie because he won't even tell his fucking coach what the fuck's going on.
Yeah, see, this is the stuff with Kyrie is he just wants to do shit his way. He's got no he can be an amazing player, but everything he does is sort of a little bit team-wrecking.
Yeah, but having said that, if you were having personal struggles of an emotional or mental style, you would tell your co-workers more than you would tell your boss. And I think to a certain extent, you don't necessarily want to confide.
I think your front office is your boss. I think you would tell your
coach. Your coach is still your line manager, really.
Yeah, okay. I don't see teams quite that way, but I get your point. I would not be surprised to see the Heat trade for James Harden.
I would be incredibly surprised, just because there's no way. It would be the ultimate test of Heat culture, wouldn't it? I think it would just be like a bearded Dion Waiters out there.
But exactly, they'd sign Dion Waiters to a 3-year deal. I just don't think. Like, I think in the end they just don't care. Like that.
They signed Dion Waiters to that because they had no other fucking options.
Well, maybe they don't have an option here. Like, their team is not – like, I know Hero's young, but Butler's not exactly got 10 years of good play left in him.
And Butler's just not a guy who will accept being the number two to a really good number one. Now, the problem is I'm not sure Harden is that really good number one.
I think the kind
of number one he is.
I think they back Spoelstra to be able to deal with anyone. I really do. I think they just go, he'll deal with it. That would not be surprised. I was really interested on Lowe's podcast the other day how the theory was floated that the Heat of coming up publicly and said, well, you know, we're not interested in Harden is just a smokescreen so that they can beaver away in the background to pull together whatever it is that that the Rockets want. But the Rockets have to do something, don't they, before the end of the season?
Well, the Rockets are going to get more and more desperate. I think that's what the Heat figure is. The closer you get to the trade deadline, their position actually gets better, not worse. Because the Rockets are going to continue to suck and Harden's going to continue to be passive-aggressive and shitty, which is another – and also knock down his own trade value in the process, which is good for him but useless for the team that he plays for.
The other one is the Raptors. Would the Raptors – pull the trigger on.
We'll fast forward to the Raptors because the Raptors are 2-6 and they fucking suck. And it doesn't make sense for them to suck because all they did was you took their two intelligent bigs in Ibaka and Gasol and they traded them to various parts of Los Angeles and replaced them with Aaron Baines, who is renowned as being a decent locker room guy and a good, you know, a decent big. And Baines has been fucking awful. And Alex Len has not been any better. And as we've discussed before, they're a bit more Chris Boucher seems to be the way that as distinct from Bobby Boucher, the guy from The Waterboy. Maybe they could give him a run as well. But it's very odd because they've still got Nick Nurse and they've still got all these players. Pascal Siakam has been playing like dog shit and has clearly got some shit going on. You wonder how much of this is like the bubble affected people differently. And you wonder, they went a fair way through. You wonder whether they're carrying any physical and psychological baggage from that, because they're still, as you pointed out in our preview, they're the Tampa Bay Raptors. They still don't get to go home. Their families are having to go to different schools. They're in literally the state that has dealt with COVID the worst, so they are constantly in fear of fucking themselves, you know, of their families fucking them up and giving them and exposing them to COVID and killing their season.
That's why I just did not want to pick them in our pools pick. I just thought it's just so hard for them.
And Adam picked them second with the second pick of the draft in the East, and they're currently, 13th?
Yeah. I just thought it was too hard, and I just thought it was just too much extra for them to deal with on top of all the other shit. Like, it's hard for any team this season.
Yeah. But it's going to be impossible for them.
Yeah.
I mean, even though a lot of them are not Canadians, it doesn't matter because your home is, you're still a long way from it.
Yeah.
So in between Toronto and Miami are Atlanta and Chicago, who have been, particularly Chicago, they've been better than you'd expect. They got a good win against the Portland when Portland shat the bed again, up 20, 30 points and still shat the bed. Below them are Detroit and Washington, who are 2-8, and Brad Beal has been racking up huge amounts of points and getting increasingly volubly upset with how badly they play defense. I think his line from the last game was that they couldn't guard a parked car. And I know that in Washington there's been a few issues with people not being able to guard things in the recent past, but maybe they can take over as being the state capital police force.
That's another one, like, When do you sell on Beal?
I think when he's scoring 60 points a game and talking shit about your team is a really good time to try and cash that asset in.
Yeah, like I think you have to, because he's there's just zero chance of him staying, just absolutely. And there's a good chance that at some point he's just gonna.
He's not that close to the end of a contract, though, is he?
No, but at what point does he turn into Harden where he's just like, I just couldn't be fucked. I couldn't be fucked scoring 60 points.
I think he's a – and I don't want to slag off Harden, but I think Beal's a higher-class dude than Harden. I think Harden is a throwback to a sort of NBA player that we haven't really seen from the 90s, the real fucking I'm going to get mine and fuck all of you. That kind of guy – you don't see that. We certainly don't see. I mean, you know the sort of player I'm talking about. Fucking Gilbert Arenas, Stephon Marbury, those sorts of score first, score second, score third, ask questions fourth sort of players. Those players are at least better at controlling the PR narrative around themselves so that they don't appear to be vain, fucking self involved assholes.
Yeah. The post Jordan, almost post Kobe, you know. I'm going to get mine and fuck you sort of
Jordan
thing that
and Kobe
I don't have.
Were always about winning, not about getting stats and money. Yeah. And I think that's the difference.
Yeah, that's right. It was watching, learning to play basketball by watching Jordan highlights on a bar TV. It was how some of those guys seem to have learned. You know, they didn't learn all the lessons. They just learnt the highlight reel lessons.
Well, they learnt more off your fucking. I'm trying to think of dudes from the 90s, like Larry Johnson or someone. You know, someone who just went out and just racked up huge points on shit teams and made huge amounts of money. That's kind of, and, you know, bought all the cars and appeared in all the gangster rap. I mean, I don't want to say Allen Iverson because I feel like there was a bit more soul at the center point of that dude, but he was an avatar for the sort of player, like Allen Iverson would have been the favorite player of a lot of those sorts of guys, if that made any sense. And you don't see that sort of player anymore, probably because they're better at controlling their PR narrative.
Yep. So, yeah, I think that's more an off-season shooter drop than an in-season shooter drop, that one. Yep.
I can't remember what we were talking about because I was talking about me, and that's what really matters. I went off and I got to have a big run up, and it made me happy.
I do like the players that say, "Oh no, we never look at the media. We don't do that." And DeJounte Murray's just absolutely smashing ESPN, saying he's definitely DeMar DeRozan is not the 82nd best player in the NBA. I can tell you that.
How do you get to 82nd?
Which he's had a weird start to the season. He's shooting threes and I don't know. It's just weird. And I just like Patty Mills going, fuck it, I'm at the end of my contract. I'm just going to do whatever I like.
He points. he looks like he's looking more and more like an ancient elder, isn't he? He's got this big tangled web of fucking of dreads, and he looks about 67 years old. He looks like he's going to appear to you in a vision. But he's nailing threes. That's pretty good.
I'm convinced that he's going to become the Udonis Haslam of the Spurs. You know, he'll just keep getting contracts and just slowly play less and less minutes until, you know, he's on the roster but not playing any minute. Because Haslam's just got another contract.
It's easier to organize that than to make him a fucking I think there are certain – the point of having Udonis Haslam in a uniform is that he carries gravitas that he wouldn't have if he was in a suit. Like the other players,
because he
takes part in training, takes part in practice in a way that he wouldn't if he was a coach. And it's kind of like you were saying about, you know, the difference between front office as your management and the coach as your management. There's also a difference between a coach as your management and another player who's a peer as your management. You can get different messages across from that perspective.
I think there's also rules about what assistant coaches in the NBA can do that don't apply to players.
No, assistant coach can't punch you in the face for being a fucking lazy prick on a pick and roll defense. Fucking up a screen or something.
Yeah, so I'm all for that.
All for punching players because that's why you're being suspended as a coach.
Actually, I'll get you to post this in the show notes. The Letterkenny the Letterkenny hockey coach is just, you know, just the absolute over the top. I guess probably more of this coach in hockey, but, you know, probably like your country rugby league coach, you know, screaming in players' faces and stuff like that. It's just an amazing parody. But they put out, over the New Year's break, they put out a how-to video of how to kick the garbage can. You know, when you're in the locker room and you lose your shit, and he's like, there's three different ways you can kick it. And they do this whole full-on coaching video about it, right down to the slow-mos of the replay. You're fucking embarrassing. So, of course, I sent that to all my coaching staff. Yeah, I said, look, it's good to learn from multiple different sports, and here's one from hockey I think we can take on.
The thing is that because when you're trying to motivate people, and unfortunately parenting involves this too, sometimes you have to performatively lose your shit for people to get the message that their behavior wasn't appropriate. And, you know, it's not about, you know, kicking, you know, trash cans over or whatever, but sometimes you actually have to. And sometimes, like with parenting, I actually say, look, we're having a nice conversation here, but if you continue to behave badly, I'm going to have to shout at you a lot. Do you really want that?
Yeah.
It's kind of...
Well, Nick Nurse, in the Nick Nurse book, he reckoned he had six of those in a season, like six in the regular season and postseason. Yeah. So if you think that's 100 games of all those minutes and he thought that he could lose his shit six times effectively in a year. You've got to hold them out, don't you?
I mean, it is very much like parenting, because if you lose your shit constantly, then it'll just be white noise.
Yeah. So yeah, that was the two ends to that spectrum.
Shall we circle back to the entire point of this, which is to brag about the fact that I'm winning the wins pool? Well, it's kind of a bit of a false, sort of. It's a bit fake, isn't it? Because I'm 48 and 44 of the teams that we. So, if for anybody who's new to the podcast, at the start of the season, myself, Bezo, and our silent partner, third member,
regular guest host
Adam H. Photo. We all drafted teams from the East and the West, and basically the wins of those teams contribute to our overall. So my teams have played 92 and 48 and 44. You've only played 85 games. So for some reason your teams are like seven games back, and it's odd because you don't have any of the teams that were caught up in the COVID cancellations, like the Rockets. In fact, that's one of my teams. But you're 44 and 41, and Adam's team's 44 and 46, but that's only recently flipped that way. So we're all kind of milling around 500, and that's also true for most of the teams, because most of the teams in both conferences are kind of much more so than any other year. They're very, you know, the bell curve is very squashed in the middle, around 500. And I was thinking about that because that's also what you see in all the European football leagues at the moment. Like there are no great teams that are running away with it. Like Liverpool and Man United are top of the Premier League, but they're constantly losing games and shedding points. My team, Milan, are leading leading the Serie A, but they lost last week. But so did Inter. So it's constantly, you know, there's a great big squash. There's a very short gap between mid-table and relegation, and also mid-table and the top of the league. And it feels like, for whatever reason, lockdown football and lockdown basketball, you know, no fans and all those sorts of things, are tending to squash the performances of the teams. Even though there's more blowouts, the overall performances, the overall win-loss records seem to be kind of compressed closer to 500 than they normally would be.
Well, you only got to look at the Bulls played the Lakers yesterday, and the Lakers won by 2 points against one of the worst sides in the league.
Yeah, a lot of people have been using that as an example of, I mean, the Bulls aren't... Bulls aren't that bad, but the thing, a lot of people have been using that as an example of why the Lakers are sleepwalking through the season and they're somehow in trouble. But I think it's just a matter of they're really just picking their spots, and a lot of teams are, but the Lakers even more so than anybody.
Yeah.
And also they've got I think it was AD who mildly dragged their two guards in Schroeder and Wes Matthews and saying these guys don't know how we play defense yet, and they're still figuring it out. And they're blocking assignments, and they'll figure it out because they're intelligent basketball players.
Yeah, they're sort of on a lesser version of what the Warriors are, where they've got a bigger balance of players that were there before. You know, whereas the Warriors are basically two guys and then everyone else has sort of rocked up. You know, it's almost like Curry and Draymond have gone down the rec league and said, okay, you 10 guys, come back with us and play an NBA season.
And also, as we said, this has been the year of basketball IQ. That you can't just replace an old bloke with a young bloke who has the same stat line, because the lack of knowing what the fuck is going on is making a massive difference to how teams actually impact on winning.
Yep. Anyway, all right, Doc, we could come back next week and it'll be completely fucking different. And
we will come back next week. But next week we'll come back on the music side. As you know, this is a podcast for those who are joining us for the first time this year. You're welcome. This is also a music podcast, and we have our Album of the Year episode coming up very shortly. So next week we're going to drop our album. Did I say Album of the Week? Album of the Year.
The Year.
Album of the Year episode next week, not Album of the Week episode next year.
I have to say it might be one of the hardest years that we've done.
This is tough. We were going to record it this weekend, folks, but full disclosure, but I'm still, my top five list is still 20 albums long, so this isn't going well. I'm bad at this. Maybe I should
just wait. Mine just keeps flipping, and it keeps flipping because I don't, there's just bits that I'm not convinced about in every single segment, but we'll get more into that next week.
You're doubting everything. That's true. So we'll be back next week with our Album of the Year episode, and we might have time to talk a bit more basketball then as well. But until then, we'll catch you later.
Catch ya.
Gary has absolutely no idea what has happened to it. Still doesn't know.
I'll stop shouting into this bin.
No!
The longer they bowl on the last day, the better it gets for Lyon, doesn't it? Not that India are going to get the runs, but more, you know, if you're bowling in that last session, Lyon's going to be pretty much unplayable, I would have thought.
The problem is that they want them to be nine down in the final session, yeah. not four down.
I wonder if Labuschagne will get a bit of a bowl this innings. They might, to be honest, their bowling's good.
He should just fucking bowl instead of pissing about like he's got ADD. That wasn't helpful.
The problem, Cummins might not let it get to that stage. He's just a freak. Just an absolute freak. I was thinking about this. He's like McGrath, but if McGrath was really, really quick. Like the ball he bowled to Rahane, he was just classic McGrath, where it's just where you go, oh, yeah, I can hit this. No, I can't. It's just moved enough that it turned from a ball that I could, like, cut into a ball that I'm going to nick to the slips.
See, that always felt like, I mean, Hazelwood feels more like the new McGrath to me, just because of the relentless, metronomic line of length. But Cummins can
hit
him.
It's just more his control. Like, Cummins is just, you're just not used to someone who's that quick. You know, Stark's probably a more prototypical fast bowler where, you know, when he's on and it's going well, he's unplayable. But there's days where he'll just, you know, put six down the leg side in the first four overs. Whereas Cummins just never get the feeling like he's out of control in his bowling.
Nah, fair enough. Welcome to our NBA podcast.
Yeah.